The Education Channel supports individual educational goals and encourages creativity for all. Visit uctv.tv/education.
Hello and welcome to the Mi Universidad Mi Camino video series, where alumni share their experiences to and through UC San Diego. Today we'll be talking to Darlene Lopez. Darlene is the founder of her own startup business, Evoke Creative, whose mission is to bring Latin culture forth. Before creating her own company, Darlene led Latin music business for TikTok and oversaw the development of the Latin music strategy for Apple Music. Welcome, Darlene. So we always like to start off with getting to know our guest a little bit better. If you wouldn't mind sharing, like, where did you grow up, where is your family from, and what was the general attitude regarding higher education in your home?
So I'm from San Diego. Grew up here. My mom actually lives right on the border now. And my parents are from Peru, so we're pretty far from Peru, and there's a few of us here in the, you know, San Diego area, but I grew up in a lot of the Mexican culture, a lot of, like, the Latin culture in Southern California, and then I went to the Peru school, and that kind of started my whole relationship with the UC system in La Jolla, which is a little different sometimes when you think about, you know, I grew up in Southeast San Diego, but I spent most of my time in La Jolla and, you know, going to the shore, working here, even in college, I was, like, still working in the area. So UCSD's been a big part of my life for most of it, you know?
Yeah, so maybe you can share a little bit more about how you found yourself at the Preuss School.
So going back to the first question, so my mom and my dad were both educated in Peru. My dad was working as an accountant for the government, and my mom was a law student when they both left because of the communist threat. Mm-hmm. So they left in 81, and they were always kind of big about education. Both my sister and I were pushed to, like, go to college, you know, get a career. And my mom kind of really poured into me as a kid. So she challenged me a lot. I had to go to school at La Jolla Elementary for fifth grade. It was a kind of a program that they started to bus students and diversify their student body. So I was kind of used to being a little bit of the minority from a really early age. One of my teachers in fifth grade, she was part of a teachers forum, and they were, I think, advertising or not really promoting it, but sharing more about the Preuss School and its mission. It was still really, really new. And she found this on a forum, and she suggested that I apply, and she thought I would be a really great fit for it. So I had a teacher that, like, really poured into me to apply, and my mom thought it was a great idea. I hated the uniforms. But it was from a really early age that my mom was like, you need to always challenge yourself, right? You know, and that's when it started. And I went there from 6 through 12, so from 2001 till 2008 when I graduated.
So you were part of UC San Diego's College Preparatory School, which is Preuss, and you also were an undergraduate at UC San Diego. So how did you come to choose UC San Diego? Was that a logical choice because you went to Preuss or something else?
I think it was a little bit of both. So UCSD was the best school I got into when I applied. And at first I was a little bit hesitant about staying because I was like, well, I was part of the system. I don't know, I want something new. And I spoke to my my government and politics AP professor at Preuss, and I was telling her, I'm like, you know, I'm between this school and another school. And she's like, UCSD is so much better. She's like, you won't regret it, you should totally go. She's also an alumni of UCSD. She ended up leaving the Preuss School to go back to work on the campus, and I'd seen her a few times since then. And she was actually a lawyer, too. So she was, like, an amazing teacher I had when I was in high school, and she kind of helped me make that decision, you know?
Yeah, well, we're glad we got you.
I know. It was a good decision. I'm like, oh, I don't regret it.
Let's talk a little bit about your experience at UC San Diego. Can you tell us a little bit about what your first year was like?
So when I first went to UCSD, I was being a little cynical. I was being a freshman, and I was like, I have all this freedom now. So I stayed at home, I lived at home, and I worked full time. And I think that I got what I put into it. So the first year, I made, like, one or two friends. I didn't really feel connected to the campus. And I decided at the end of the year that I would move on to the campus and really, you know, start investing my time and kind of immersing myself. Mm-hmm. Because I think UCSD is it's a huge campus, and it's really you get what you put into it. And once I moved on to the campus, I made, like, so many friends. I joined clubs. I, like, ended up growing as, like, a leader in my student organization. And I just kind of, like, kickstarted my life after that first year. You know, I even got a job at the Hillcrest location.
Okay.
Yeah, as a student assistant, and it just started from there, but it was because I basically took the chance to just let go of kind of being at home and immersing myself.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, because we know that sense of belonging and having community at any higher education institution is really key to student success. So you mentioned some student org. What was the student org that you found yourself leading and being part of?
So Hermanas Unidas, the UCSD, it's a Latina-focused sisterhood, not a Greek organization. They're based in California. It's throughout the state. There's about 16 or 17 chapters. And so they were being founded when I was, I think, like a sophomore. So my roommates ended up being some of the founding members. And they were like, you should come. And, you know, I was like, I think I was like 20, almost 21 at the time. And I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with my life? And, you know, going through like a breakup or something. I don't even remember. But they're like, just come to the meetings. And they had a partnership with a women's center that they could use the space Wednesdays at like 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock to just hold that space for general body meetings and like pláticas and just really cool stuff that we could do. And it just started from there. And so after the first year, I was like, I ran for treasurer, and then I became the co-chair. And then when I graduated, I was the alumni advisor for 2 years. So it's kind of like you're always in its orbit, and it just ties you back to the campus.
And are you still in contact with some of your original Hermanas Unidas friends?
Yeah. I am. So we actually held an alumni brunch like a month ago, and I just got to talk to some of the girls. One of our members, who's a little bit younger, who reached out to me to join the org when she was a freshman, just had her wedding, and she's like this adult now, and it's like super cool to see that. So I went to her wedding, and one of the hermanas that's part of the national board, she was my lender when I bought my home.
Oh, wow.
So we really help each other.
That's nice. That's great. And I want our young scholars to hear that you can create a community and form lifelong friendships that, you know, follow you after you graduate.
Yeah, I definitely feel like with Hermanas, the reward, obviously the on-campus life was great, having a community, having the fundraising events on Library Walk, being able to do events, go to the club events that they have, support each other. That was fun when I was in college. But afterwards, the alumni association and that network is really important, you know, because you have actual impact. You know, like I was able to hire someone on to be my lender, and that's like, you know, a Latina woman who's like has her own business, and it's like providing her with a resource, and also being, you know, she was super helpful for me understanding property taxes, and I refer a lot of people to her, and she gets them financially ready, you know, to buy a home. And then I've also been able to connect other people with like taxes, and you know, just having that fortune of an alumni association once you're an adult and learning to adult together, I think was really helpful for me.
It's nice to have a network.
Yeah. So you got to do life together,
yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Well, this is, of course, the Mi Camino series. And so we're really interested in hearing about your camino, how you came to, you know, create Evoke Creative. And so what was your pathway to starting your own company?
That's a great question. So both of my parents are small business owners. I kind of joke around with my family that it's like this proven thing about not wanting to have a boss. Okay. And so you're like, you always want to be your own boss. So my parents were both small business owners. My mom is still a small business owner. My dad's retired, but still dabbles here and there with some investing in Peru. And I always knew that I wanted to have something for myself one day. But when I ended up interning at Apple Music as a grad student in LA, one of the more senior people that I spoke with, he told me, make this your plan B, always have your plan A for yourself. And I think Steve Jobs is quoted saying that if you don't build your own dreams, you'll get paid to build someone else's. Mm. So I had that in the back of my mind, and I thought maybe in like 10 years I'll start my own business, I'll be ready, I'll have this huge like reputation or network or something. But at the top of this year, I was working at TikTok, and I was getting approached by different partners and different labels about helping them. And I felt like what I was doing at the company wasn't impacting the artists and the music and the culture, quite frankly, as much as I could do outside of it. You know, having that institutional knowledge and how to use these platforms and like the resources, right? And just synthesizing and contextualizing tech platforms for like Latin communities, which is, it seems really easy if you think about Instagram or Facebook, but it's pretty hard when you think about the language barrier and then access to resources and information. So that's where it kind of started, where I was like, you know what? I think it's time to file for an LLC, you know, and just kind of work that. And so towards the middle of the year, there were so many changes with the company and just changes with how the industry's going that I decided to just do it full steam, you know, just not get my ankles wet, go in and you know, be an independent business owner.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how's that been for you?
Surprisingly, it's sometimes I feel really quiet and I'm like, oh, like I still have like that phantom pain of like emails and all that. But then other times it's like, shoot, if I don't do all of this, like it's not gonna happen. So it's wearing many hats, and it's also learning how I work now. So I'm like, okay, I need to get up early, do everything I need to do. Maybe before I would have had a different like daily lifestyle where I'm like, okay, you check in at work, you do your thing, then check out. Now it's like being available at night, scoping different projects, learning what you need. Like I have a call with like a lawyer, that's a first, you know, I've never really had a lawyer. So learning about contracts and agreements, and then also learning what I need. So right now in this first phase, I've just bootstrapped it myself. And then, you know, phase two will be investments. And I think that's exciting, you know?
That is exciting. Mm-hmm. So your primary experience has really been in the music industry, the business part of it. And we're curious, like, what is hot right now? And what tips might you have for graduates who might be interested in a career in music or another creative industry?
I think from the Latin lens perspective, because that's what I've worked in for so long, we're just kind of basking in the globalization of Mexican music. It's always been there. It's been a big part of just the overall market share of the industry in general, and just the, you know, the demographic in the US, you know? But there wasn't really an acknowledgement or an investment into Mexican music, which is like rancheras or sireño, corridos, all the stuff that we're seeing now, and just this new hybridization of the sounds and the different artists that are kind of peppering their music throughout different genres. So I've been really excited to see how independent Mexican music labels have come to the forefront, and they're owning their catalog, they're owning their brand, they're using these major labels to distribute their music, but they're not in the driver's seat, right? The artist is, or the independent label is, and I think it's exciting. It's a great disruptor, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I know you asked for students that want to get involved in music.
Yeah.
I think one of the most important things they can do is research the industry. So just Googling, you know, like what are labels, what are versus distributors, publishing, songwriting. You know, there's so many facets of the industry where you can make money, or you can own your catalog, or you can join, you know, different organizations like Women in Music or the Recording Academy if you've worked in the industry long enough. Without being a voting member, you can still be a member. And I think there's so many different positions or like third party, you know, like agencies like myself that exist that work within the industry that aren't really on paper. You don't really take a class to learn about it. You just, you know, get kind of exposed to it.
And so what did you major here at UC San Diego? And what did you take from, what did you learn from those majors that you find yourself leaning into as a businesswoman?
So I double majored. My first major was political science. And my second major was religion, which I took my fourth and fifth year of college. So I originally thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and I kind of still tinker with that idea a little bit. I'm like, maybe I should go back to law or go to law school. But the biggest thing, and I actually was thinking about this the other day, that I learned in my poli sci track was setting the agenda. So the person who sets the agenda really has the power. Mm-hmm. And that's been really, I think, institutional in understanding how, you know, down to business meetings, all the way to getting time with somebody, when you are pushing forth your agenda, you're really like able to move things forward and make a change. So that's been something that I think about a lot when I think about business and negotiations.
Very nice. And did you take anything from your religious studies?
You know what's crazy is there was a lot of classes I took on film in religion, and it changed the way I watch movies now. So they're not so scary anymore, and I watch a lot of scary movies.
Oh, wow, okay.
But Latinos over-index in scary movies. We love
really?
Watching scary movies, yeah.
Right. Well, this Latino does it.
I don't know why we like being scared, but...
I like to stay away from scary movies.
Yeah.
So what advice might you give people who are thinking about coming to UC San Diego? What advice might you give them?
I would say fully immerse yourself. Fully immerse yourself and leave no stone unturned. You know, there's resources out there, there's scholarships, there's, you know, I look back and I'm like, oh, why didn't I meet with that professor? Why didn't I reach out? why didn't I like get up early and do this like 8 a.m. session I wanted to do? I don't feel like I pushed myself enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm saying that and I'm like, had a career and I'm like wanting to go to law school now. But when I was younger, I just feel like I could have fully just, you know, plucked the apple off the tree and like been into it really hard, if that makes sense. Like, I should have studied abroad more. I should have, like, you know, I studied abroad in Spain, and I think that also helped me understand flamenco music, and I did it with John Moore, who's part of Linguistics. I hope he's still around.
He's still around.
Oh, amazing. Okay, I need to thank him for, like, just his program was amazing. But I think that if you fully immerse yourself and just submit to, like, the program and the campus and meeting friends and just staying open-minded, you just have this amazing experience, you know? My regret is not diversifying more. I hung out with a lot of the Latino students, and I'm like, oh, I should have made friends with, like, the Panhellenic, you know, IFC community, and I should have done this, and I should have, like, joined art club and, you know, just, I don't know, learned Mandarin, I don't know, just enjoyed it more, you know?
Yeah, just doing more overall.
Doing more, yeah.
Yeah, and immersing yourself more. So you mentioned John Moore, who is now the dean of our undergraduate education. And so were there any mentors that stood out during your time at UC San Diego that mentored you, that you recall?
Let's see. I think, so one of the professors that, two of the professors in the religion department, Diana Calares, is she still around?
I don't know.
Okay. She would take the train from Dana Point down to San Diego to teach the classes, and she just I think her expertise was in like women and religion and Christianity, and she just was so cool and kind of scary and like was so like just knew what she was looking for her students and like how we should be writing and kind of the expectations. And I always just remember how she would make the time to talk about things and how she kind of pushed me a lot to like, hey, your essay could have been stronger, this could have been better. I'm like, okay, let me try to do better. And then Professor Rahimi, Babak Rahimi, I still have him on Instagram. He was like the nicest professor, just, you know, religion, film, super kind. He was like very kind during like finals week, midterms. I think we all loved him. Mm-hmm. But he was just such a great, like, gentle professor. You know, I really remember them. Yeah.
Nice. So you've been in the business industry for some time. And I know that you've had some interesting internships, like the companies that you mentioned, like TikTok and Apple. You know, those are companies that I think a lot of scholars dream of working for. Can you share a little bit about how you came to find yourself employed by these companies?
Yes. So I think I took the traditional route, which people say doesn't really work. But with Apple, I applied. And that was the craziest thing. So I was already in my grad school program in LA, and I was looking to, you know, I felt like I was being very aggressive with like, where do I want to work? And I'm like, I don't want to work at an agency, which is ironic because now I have one. But I was like, I want to work in-house, and I want to work for a big brand, and I want to see what that's like to work on their marketing or PR team. So I kind of had a vision of like where I want to see myself and try it out. Okay, this isn't for me. Try this out. It isn't for me. You know, I tried out a corporate communications internship with the Los Angeles Rams, and I was like, this is so cool. I was like on the field during game day, but then I realized that that wasn't the area that I really felt passionate about, and it's also there's very few Latino people or Latinx folks in general in like the NFL. But when I was applying to Apple Music, I saw that there was a Latin music internship, and I reached out to the Career Services Center on my campus, which is what I think every student should do. And I don't think enough students know to, like, it's kind of like perder la pena. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't, closed mouths don't get fed. You have mm-hmm. to get your resume, take it to the Career Services Center, ask them to fix it for you, ask them to edit it. Go onto the job board app, ask the career services folks if they have a network contact. I did that, and I was able to like push my resume through at Apple, and then, you know, got the internship at Apple Music. And then afterwards, when I was looking for another role, because I was at Apple for 5 years and it was like time to grow, I started having the conversation with TikTok and finding who works there, who can I talk to, who's the recruiter, and I also, this was kind of fun. I used the LinkedIn premium trial. I'll use that once in a while because they offer you a free trial before you pay the subscription. But you can in-mail message different recruiters. So mm-hmm. up to 5, I think, per month. So I've done that before where I find the roster, find like the team that I think I need to reach out to start the trial or do the premium for a few months, investing in myself basically for those few months that I'm paying for it. And I'm like reaching out to recruiters. I have my pitch ready to go. I'm like, hey, I'm applying. I never make it like a send me your link. I'm always like, this is what I do. I feel like I would be a great fit for this role. Let's get some time. I'm sending you my resume. And that's kind of how I kickstarted my career at TikTok.
That's awesome. So what I'm appreciating about you is like you put yourself out there, right? Like you're initiating the contacts. You're not kind of waiting. And you're saying, well, I'm going to try this channel. I'm prepared. I've got my script. I've got everything. You're setting your own agenda, as you said.
I guess so. Yeah, I am setting. That sounds cooler than being like, I'm aggressive. but yeah, I think, so I have a friend who has her own business also, and her sister designs custom piece like hats for different companies. And she shared with me that her sister wasn't getting the recognition on like the website and all that. And she was worried about it. And I said, well, your sister needs to reach out to the business lead and ask about it, because unfortunately meritocracy is only one part of the overall picture, and you can't really sit there and wait for someone to acknowledge that you're doing the work. You have to go out there and ask for it. You have, you know, closed mouths don't get fed. And I think especially as young women or women of color, people of color in general, you just need to go for it, you know, because people won't even know you need it or you want it, you know?
Exactly. And so maybe if you're comfortable, maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, being a woman in business industry, being a woman of color in the business industry. What have been some of the pros and cons, and what have you learned to do differently?
That's great. That's a great question. So where I'm at right now and kind of where I'm seeing like the business, so because I've worked for really big companies before, you're kind of insulated by that brand and how people treat you in certain industries. You know, if you have this big, you know, flagship like Apple or TikTok or, you know, Spotify, Amazon behind you, there's more access. People kind of treat you differently. And so I have always kind of had the privilege of being respected when I've, you know, worked with different team members around the world. I've worked with, you know, companies or labels out of like Colombia and Puerto Rico, Spain. And there is sometimes a bit of a kind of a minimizing when I've worked with some like Spanish counterparts, where it's kind of like, oh, this person's younger, oh, this person doesn't know. And it's like, well, no, this is actually my culture and this is me. But it didn't really happen too much until I am now independent, and you can kind of see like how the framework changes a bit. So I had one tech platform that's up and coming, and they hired my agency to consult for them. And then they were like, hey, we're out of budget. We can't really, you know, keep this up. I'm like, no, that's totally fine. But then their CEO approached my network and offered them equity in their company. And I was like, I thought you couldn't afford a consultant, but you're offering my contact equity. So I got mad about it. And I was like, this is because I'm a woman. And I was like, and then I thought about it. I'm like, well, this is business. So I asked them for some time, and I just had a straight conversation. I just said, hey, like, I have feedback for you on your platform. I have feedback for you on this program. Also, I know that you're offering equity to someone in my network that I brought to you. I want you to understand that, I don't know how, if you know how this came off, but is this how you do business? So I can make sure that I keep my network close-knit. And it was a receptive conversation. I think he acknowledged that, you know, he has those biases also and he needs to change that. And I told him, as a Latino in the C-suite, I'm rooting for you, but I want to make sure I'm able to do business with you. And it just takes out the emotion out of it, and it kind of just leaves it with them, and they're a little bit surprised, and then they send you a contract to offer you equity.
Yeah, nice. So, you know, you're reclaiming power and you're building your dream, right? Not somebody else's dream.
True, and setting the standard for how they're going to work with you. Right. You know, there is a part of me that was a little bit like, I did feel a little triggered, because I'm like, oh, you thought I was just another assistant, another Latin female assistant that's going to just connect you with the men in the room, and then you guys are going to have the conversation. That may happen this one time, but I will not bring you resources again if that's the case. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I'm so glad you're here, because I hope the young Latinas who are listening to this are being inspired by a powerful mujer who's like, you know, this is not okay. Let's have a conversation, right?
I mean, it's like you learn something new every day. I'm like, okay, I did that, and I didn't get mad.
So that's great. And just to wrap up, is there anything you'd like to share about your company before we sign off with our listeners today?
Yeah, so I think the thing with Evoke Creative Agency and just the overall vision was really to bring Latinos or Latin culture forth, and that's why Evoke was really the word, because I thought it means comes to mind or, you know, brings forth. And so when I think about where we stand in this digital age and how the demographics in the U.S. are changing, you know, Latinos are, we hit 19% of the population, we're almost at a fifth, and we have a $3.2 trillion spending power. I would love to see what it looks like when we understand the worth that we have and the value and the voice that we have to really impact trends. And so my goal is to really just kind of shake the table a bit, do a little disruption. I think they refer to the Latin community as a sleeping giant, and I would love to empower people to really vote with their dollars and allow us to set the trends more often than being, you know, kind of swept up in the trends that we may not, that may not be designed for us. You know, I think a big thing for me is the beauty standard and how, you know, young girls and women will really contort themselves to fit into that standard and that mold. And I'm like, $3.2 trillion spending power, we don't have to buy Skims. Mm-hmm. We don't have to buy shapewear. We don't have to fit in. We can just be as we are and spend the money that on the products that make sense for us. And so that's really my goal, to empower people, especially Latinos, to vote with what works best for you. Don't try to contort yourself to fit in.
Nice. Last question. Mm-hmm. What would you tell your 18-year-old self today if you were talking to her?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say stop taking it so seriously and have fun. Enjoy the ride. You know, like, you got this. I think, and I told my 28-year-old self that too. But I think sometimes I was so laser focused on the next step or the next goal or locking this in or figuring it out that I just didn't enjoy it enough. And I just think, let it roll off your back. Like, you're gonna have a great time. You're gonna be fine. Just be happy.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.